Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Tonight, we're going to examine the state of modern medicine and medical services.
First, we're going to tell you views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station.
And now let's show them why.
Yes. We're going to talk more about medical services. Basically, our choices now are the Affordable Care Act, VA, Medicare, Medicaid, Medi-Cal, and then private pay, which is your health plan network type thing.
And, of course, the so-called Affordable Care Act is kind of the umbrella that regulates how all of those operate.
And four of those five are government agencies or bureaucracies that control the health care.
Yes. Medi-Cal is California's massaged version of Medicaid. Many states do that. But Medicaid and Medicare are both federal programs.
Yes, and so is VA. So they're pretty much control of our medical care now. And?
And I want to talk about the two forms of medical care, the two top forms of medical care that would have precluded the need for the Affordable Care Act and would have solved all of our medical problems were they incorporated. And those are, number one, the patient's being held responsible for personal choices in their lifestyle. I was at in the early days of the Tea Party, I was at a Tea Party meeting, and there were lots of people there, and they had a doctor who was before the Health Care Act was enacted. And, of course, the big thing was that our health care costs were out of control. And this doctor was an expert in health care costs nationally and very well known. And he gave his talk, and then it was open mic, and I got hold of the mic, and I looked around the room, and I asked the doctor, I said, what would be the cost saving to our medical costs in the United States if everyone started practicing good lifestyle? And he said, that's an easy no-brainer, 80%. So I looked around the room at all these patriots and said, how many of you are willing to change your lifestyle? Because there were plenty of people of all different sizes and shapes in there. How many of you are willing to be part of the solution and not the problem and get up off the couch? And all I got was, you know, the South Park, rabble, 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 rabble. Nobody wanted to talk or answer. And that's the problem in our country today. We're not being held responsible. The other one is education. If you notice you go to the doctor, it hasn't happened in a long time since we've had third-party payers, but especially now, if they could educate you, you know, tell you about the choices you can make, what to expect medically when they're going to do something, and think of the outcomes if they actually took the time to educate you. But the system doesn't pay for that. The system pays for them to basically give you a pill that hopefully they have enough time to actually explain to you what the pros and cons of the pill could be. So those two things would save so much money that we could probably all pay privately for our health care.
Let's tie these two things together on a level of, one, that education. If we were better educated as kids, mm-hmm, about our lifestyle choices, and I'm not just talking about eating pizza and hamburgers, I'm talking about the daredevil activities, these types of things that we don't think about as these are our freedoms we take for granted, and nobody wants to abandon those. It's that lifestyle of living on the edge, driving fast, eating yourself to your obese, or not actually doing any physical activity because being lazy is a lot more fun than, you know, having to sweat. Those types of things, if we were educated as kids as to the cause and effect and long term, maybe it would be better for society overall, not just in medical care.
Well, overall it would be. Now, when you talk about daredevils, you know, there are adrenaline junkies who you can talk to till you're blue in the face.
Oh, yes.
But what we libertarians believe is, why shouldn't you engage in that behavior? If it harms someone else, you should go to prison for the rest of your life. If it doesn't, go ahead and engage in it. But when you break your neck, should I have to pay for you wanting to go out and be a daredevil? That's the way a libertarian thinks.
Well, that's how our insurance is structured now. Our care is structured now, is everybody is covered under the government pretty much one way or the other, except for the private pay party. And their concept is everybody pays for everybody else, because that's the only way you can afford to, is spreading the cost over a huge number of people.
Right. And, you know, the big reason for starting this Health Care Act, one of the big reasons was that all these people that don't have insurance are going in the emergency rooms, and it's costing so much because they go in the emergency rooms. Well, a lot of these people are inpatient, and they still go to the emergency rooms because now the doctor waits are so long, they still want to use the system, so they go in the emergency room anyway. The costs haven't gone down. They've gone up. And it's not that they're going to go down later somehow. They're going to continue to go up.
Well, the bureaucracy itself causes costs, because of maintaining the bureaucracy is expensive. Paying all the people within the government to handle the paperwork and the processing is expensive.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Those costs are, how should you put it, exponential to the ones that are actual medical costs?
As a former owner of a medical company, I can tell you that if you check around the doctor's offices, the hospitals, and so on, you'll find that the payroll costs, which is your highest costs, are probably two-thirds dedicated to getting paid. How ridiculous is that?
Yes.
Instead of that money going towards health care, it's going towards getting paid for health care.
There were two other things that were contributing a lot to the Affordable Care Act, and one of those was pre-existing conditions. A lot of insurance companies would not insure those people, and that's not how we as Americans believe it should be done.
Right, and a simple thing to do if you have to have government intervention would be to just mandate that they have to take pre-existing conditions instead of all these other layers and layers of bureaucracy. But I still think that the overall regulation we had of the insurance industry prior to this probably contributed towards why they didn't have pre-existing conditions. Because think about free enterprise and think about greedy or selfish insurance companies. If there were 10 of them and there were no restrictions on them in a state, and none of them covered pre-existing conditions, and a new company moves in the states and says, well, I'll cover them for you, how big do you think their market share would be? So I just really think that problem would have taken care of itself if we didn't have all the regulatory agencies surrounding the insurance companies.
And those, there were many not covered that are now covered under the Affordable Care Act.
Right, the pre-existing conditions. As a matter of fact, that's most of who's buying the insurance, which is part of why it's crashing. Everyone else is avoiding it because it costs too much.
Well, the young people, particularly the 25 to 40 age group, who are the healthiest among us by and large, they don't want to buy health insurance because they're healthy. And this goes back.
And they want to spend their money on iPhones and games and that kind of stuff.
Well, it goes back to the mentality, it's not going to happen to me. I'm going to live forever. I'm young. So, and in that discussion of it's not going to happen to me, I've had 7 people close to me in the last year or so that have been diagnosed with tumors. Only one of them was benign. And 2 of those people are going to die, unfortunately. But the bureaucracy and the incredible inability to figure out who's going to do what for you is monumental to every one of these patients who are in dire need and are the most vulnerable and the least able to fight for themselves.
Oh, yeah. Just navigating, you know, how does the home nursing work? What kind of home nursing hours can you get? When can they come out? How do you find a nursing agency? You know, in medical equipment companies, when Medicare used to pay us more, we did all those services for free. I was frequently, and I had a person discharge a couple of years ago, a lady who was going home basically to die, and her family didn't have any knowledge of the medical system, and she had feeding tubes and all these things. And when she got home, no one had told her about any of these, how to deal with them. And I did that just from my experience in the system, but that wasn't something I was paid to do. How does it happen to them when there is no one like me there?
Well, this is the problem. And you take someone with you to go to the doctor because you need a patient advocate, because you're so overwhelmed with a diagnosis usually that you shut down hearing. You can't really take it all in, and you need that other clear-thinking person to take notes or ask questions and write it all down. But then you go back home and you suddenly realize, gee, I'm going to need X or Y or Z, and where do those services come in? How do I get those resources?
Right.
It's overwhelming. And there's no one place. You can't go to the phone book and find out this. I mean, you will spend hours and hours on the phone calling all different kinds of agencies, finding it if you're eligible, if your insurance. And a lot of them will just tell you, oh, well, you have to call your insurance, and then they call us.
And then Medicare, Medicaid, the government programs, they're no better than the insurances. And, you know, it's a technical question, what kind of nursing do I need? But that's just the beginnings of your questions. And generally speaking, it's maybe an elderly man who's terminally ill and just his poor wife who has to take care of him who are going to be asking these questions and having to navigate this system. Sometimes there's other family that are pretty good advocates, but... and sometimes it's an elderly person who lives alone. And they,
yes.
You know, we're going to stick them all in convalescent hospitals just because they can't navigate this incredible bureaucratic nightmare that we've created.
Exactly. I mean, if you have a surgery, it's done. Once you can poop and go pee, they'll send you home if you're not on an IV. And it's like, okay, I need assistance. I live alone. What happens? Well, your only choice is a rehab center, and then you don't get to pick it.
Right.
It's overwhelming. And then once you get in there, it's like, well, what are they doing for me? There's not a lot of communication. There's not a lot of choices. I was just flabbergasted at the frustration of every one of these people. If you have a chronic medical condition, an autoimmune disease, cancer, or terminal interest, your options for medical care have changed so much and are changing every day, depending upon what kind of health care you have, what kind of insurance you have.
Well, that was the problem, actually, back at the beginning of the Affordable Care Act. The insurance companies, you know, it was tough enough to navigate the structure of the way that health care was going with this change. And then, because it was crashing and burning, the government kept changing aspects of it, and these insurance companies had to try to keep up with this, and it's still not recovered from all of that. It's a mess out there. You know, if you're in health, if you're a patient, you know, you are frustrated, but you still really don't see the complexity. You just complain to whoever it is at the moment's not giving you what you need, but they're dealing with this overhead, this bureaucratic overhead that's just stifling.
I can see in the near future some sort of an advocacy group that you pay to
help
you.
There's actually a new occupation, I guess you could say, called patient advocate. Of course, they're not paid for.
No, you would have to pay for them.
Yeah, but it's a person whose job is to help you navigate the system. There isn't really any standardized proper training. I'm a foe of any standardized anything these days, but so it's kind of like you become one and somebody can afford to pay you, but if you're going to do that for a living, you're not going to be cheap if you're going to make a living at it, and who can afford that?
But think about all the small businesses with all the payroll complications now and the laws and regulations on human resources, that now there are companies that do nothing but human resources,
right,
that company hires to make sure they're in compliance with all these laws. Well, the same thing, I think, is going to evolve with it be, I don't know, an LVN or somebody who has enough medical knowledge to help you analyze what it is you need, and you're going to have to pay him or her for that knowledge. But they can help you navigate this horrific system that we have.
Well, it's true. But again, you have to have the money. You know, we've taught people now that if it's not paid for by the government or somebody, then I don't want it. You know, we're people, I deal with patients every day, and they are willing to deal with pretty mediocre stuff, even when they can afford better. Nope, Medicare doesn't pay for it. I don't want it. And it's a training we've undergone.
This is true. But even Medicare patients who buy supplemental insurance or long-term care insurance. They are, again, thrown back into, you know, we'll call your insurance carrier, and your insurance carrier has no idea what you need.
Right.
You know, they're just telling you, okay, we cover this. Now you have to go find somebody who does this.
Like any bureaucracy, they're reading from their book. One of the problems you have dealing with, especially things like Medicare, we called them once about a problem we had with a particular structure for how things are paid for this particular item. And the structure given in the Medicare manual was ambiguous. So we called and we spoke to a Medicare representative, and we told her it was ambiguous, and her answer was, well, the answer's in the structure. And we said, yeah, but those two sentences are what we're asking you. Which one is correct? Well, the answer's in the sentences. And that's how far we got. We never got past that. We had to take a shot.
Well, then, and remember, all these insurance companies and everything have call centers. Those call center people are paid minimum wage.
And they're reading a book.
Right. And so they don't have the medical knowledge that you need. And that's why I think that maybe the medical advocacy group, that new classification of jobs is necessary. And, you know, you have a service. Okay, I'm going to cost you $20 an hour to consult with you to figure this out. Even if it's $100, I need 5 hours of your time.
Except with a minimum wage now, if it goes to $15 an hour, it ain't going to be $20.
Well, whatever it is, I'm just saying, you come to a point of frustration of, you know, getting out of the hospital. And there was a big question is, okay, if I have an IV, how do I go home if I still have an IV?
Right.
You know, and there's nobody there to say, okay, well, you don't need anything else but that IV for now, or if you had a feeding tube or something else. It's not, you can go home and mom or dad can take care of you or your spouse. They don't know anything about medicine.
I can tell you from personal experience, sometimes let's take IV as an example, you send someone home with IV, the discharge planner at the hospital may have comprehensively contacted an IV nursing company and so on, but a lot of times that contact was never really finalized, and even if it has been, the patient and the family have never spoken to them.
No.
And all you can do is hope that the home contact information is good, and I've seen situations where there were holes in that, and here they are with an IV now that's kind of deteriorating and falling apart. And I have to intervene, which is not my job, to try to locate that company. When are you guys going to be here? Because of the nature of the bureaucracy, a lot of times they're centered in metropolitan areas. So these outlying areas around Reading, we'll be there in a week. It's the best we can do.
And think about, you know, we're getting here locally, we're getting fewer and fewer doctors. So if you need to see someone, and we found this with the early detection diagnosis of cancer. To catch it early is almost a joke because you're still not going to, you know, get your surgery for probably a month.
Right.
And if it's a specialized, exotic or terribly aggressive cancer, they're going to refer you to San Francisco or Sacramento or somewhere else. And then, you know, they don't contact you for a couple of weeks because they're bombarded.
Well, think about the premise of the Affordable Care Act. We're going to cover a whole bunch more people, and we're going to do it with a lot less money. So what that means is that everybody's getting paid a lot less, and so if a doctor wants to even make a living, the only way that they're going to be able to see you is by seeing as many of you as possible and trying to make it up with volume, which means if you're a cancer patient, your appointments are pushed way back because that's the only way they can do it. All those other people have appointments ahead of you. There's too many people, and they somehow thought they could do this for free. And so you will have long waits between appointments, and when you finally get there, people have horrible stories about going to see a doctor about getting a tracheostomy tube replaced. And they have to travel to Sacramento to get it done. And they go down there to see the doctor, and he goes, yep, going to have to replace it. We'll make you an appointment for that. Then you go back to Reading, you come back home, and then you go back out there just to have that done. It's just kind of out of control, and you really need to become educated in healthcare, but I don't know if anyone can become educated enough. The bureaucracy is too complex now, as it always gets.
And you don't have a doctor-patient relationship with the guy in Sacramento or San Francisco. You're another special need patient for a specialized doctor, And it's a one day, here it is, thank you, tomorrow's surgery, and they do it. And then, you know, once you're done, he's done with you, it's turn you over to somebody else.
Yeah.
You don't get that consistent care that we all think that I have a special condition and I need someone who knows every single time I don't have to reiterate my medical history to.
See, the problem with healthcare being managed by a government or even a large insurance company is that bureaucracies of that size require structure. And a structure is a framework. It's not a continuous kind of a thing. So whatever your problems are, they have to make them fit that structure. And they don't always fit. And so that's where you get the holes and the gaps and the lacks in care, is because running things by a structure, things like healthcare, just does not and never will work.
And I cannot tell you how many times each of these people have been told, okay, well, you need a scan, or you need an MRI, or you need a this or a that. And then someone calls them and says, well, we'll schedule you that in 2 weeks. And it's like, you know, I'm barely hanging on here. I can't wait 2 weeks. So you have to keep pushing and pushing and pushing when you're most vulnerable and the least able to have that energy.
Right.
It's just frustrating.
Yeah.
And not only for the patient, but for the family members who are trying to figure out the system.
And part of the problem is that people, you know, first of all, we need to all get over this idea of selfishness or greed. You know, we want to call the insurance company selfish. We want to call the drug company selfish. But each one of us is just as selfish as they are in our own way. So anytime you offer somebody something for free, when you tell them it's free, they will abuse it. And I know I'm probably rattling a lot of cages and, oh, people are horrible. No, we're all just as selfish as we are because we're human beings. So when you offer people free things, they will abuse it. They will take up the resources, certain numbers of them, and everyone suffers as a result. Not having any skin in the game just causes the system to become more dysfunctional. And so you have all these delays, and you can't care for people properly.
And I think that's what's happening to a lot of these, and I want to say cancer patients, because that's who I have been exposed to a lot lately, and their frustration and their unique conditions at the time. They're not unique to the doctor or the hospital. They see thousands of patients with, you know, IVs, or thousands of patients with feeding tubes, or whatever it is that you have. But it's new to you. You know, it's like the old saying about, oh, it's a minor surgery. Well, it is to the doctor, but it's a major surgery to me because it's happening to me.
Right.
The same thing with these kinds of medical problems that we're not used to dealing with, and it's overwhelming.
And so a little bit of advice. I mean, it sounds like all complaining. There are partial solutions, and one of them is we need to get over this notion that if it's a medical person, they somehow automatically know what they're doing. All of us medical people are human beings. We all make mistakes. So when you're in a hospital or a family member's in a hospital and you're being discharged, and they, you know, you're going to have a feeding tube and maybe some IV, maybe some other things, don't just let the person in the hospital contact those people and make the arrangements. You make sure you have contact information and you are talking with the company that's going to provide those things, you yourself.
Know who you're supposed to call and what the number is.
And what kind of questions you have to ask. You know, I sent that lady home with a feeding tube. They didn't know that it was going to have to be maintained and what happens if it becomes clogged and what happens if it comes out. No one told them any of those things. They got a piece of paper that didn't explain it very well. So ask questions and be a little demanding. It's easier for all of us if you shut up and do what we tell you, but it's extremely dangerous for you to do that.
Well, I think that even goes to the care in a hospital.
Yeah.
What, the third leading cause of deaths in the United States is medical mistakes happening in the hospital, or a interaction of drugs that they prescribe to you. I'm not talking about illegal drugs. I'm talking about prescription drugs. And so if you have a drug allergy or you have anything else, you need to verify with what they're giving you is not something you're allergic to, or you're the patient that's supposed to be getting that.
And is it really going to help you?
Yes, and the dosage. I happen to be one of those kind of people that a little tiny bit goes a real long way. And my husband or anybody who's ever with me with a medical condition, they have to make sure the doctor is aware of that. I cannot get the full dose for my height and weight or my age or anything else, or it's too much. And people, unfortunately, they write it in your medical file, but nobody reads that when they come to give you the medicine.
And some of these pills and medications can cause major changes to your lifestyle. And, you know, I've had cases where doctors tried to put me on like a blood thinner once for a condition that they thought I had that I didn't really have. And those things radically change your life and your possibility of other kinds of stroke and all kinds of things. And I refused. And it was a good thing because it turned out that what they thought I had, I didn't have. So don't automatically take medications because a doctor tells you that you need it.
That's another thing. A couple of my friends that have had the necessity for radiation and chemo, once they were at a point that they could not tolerate the chemo anymore, they just pretty much dumped them out on the curb and said, okay, well, go to this rehab center. It was like, we don't want to deal with you anymore if you can't take the drug we're giving you.
Right.
And I guess that the fields are so specialized now that, okay, but once you're sent to that rehab center, you don't have hope of an alternative. It's like they dump you out, and that's it.
Right.
You can't do what they want. You're done.
And it's not that all health care givers are bad people. The problem is that the oppressive regulation and bureaucracy now that they have to deal with, not just in terms of payers, but mandates about how they conduct medical care, have rendered it so that they can barely get their job done at all. They can't deal with all of the side things and, you know, problems that you have the way they used to be able to. You have to figure those out and ask questions.
Unfortunately, we all have to be advocates at a time when we're extremely vulnerable and not likely to be able to do that. Let's take a quick break.
Yep, we'll take a break. It's the bottom of the hour. This is Examine Life. It's KKRN. And our email is examinelife@kkrn.org. We are 88.5 FM, and we are publicly supported radio, so please support your radio station.
Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. A kiss to build a dream on.
We are back. This is Examine Life.
And we're discussing modern medicine, medical services primarily. And it's not, we've talked before about you're responsible for keeping yourself healthy and a lot of the medical changes that are taking effect. But this is the actual medical services that I think most of us are pretty ignorant of.
And I think our new social government, I know it's political, but they're trying to take away our responsibility to do anything. You know, you need to be responsible for your health care. If you were to build a house, you might hire a contractor, but you're making the decisions. The contractor does what you say, but they give you information so you can make informed decisions. That should be your relationship with your doctor. Now, that sounds all well and good, and you can be that, and especially with the internet today, which we're going to talk a little bit more about later. But the other side of it is your doctor doesn't get paid for enough time to consult with you. That's the biggest part of the problem.
And isn't there some what we call referred to as rationing of care out there now?
Yes, there is. And it's not, you know, there was this big fear that Affordable Care Act would ration care. You know, it's not built into the act that they're going to let old people die like some kind of Logan's Run thing, for those of you that are science fiction fans. But still, it's kind of built into the system because the resources are limited. There are a lot of people out there that are abusing the resources. The healthy versus sick ratio is nowhere near what they said it would be on the insurance plan. So it's all out of whack, as you can expect these things to happen. So rationing is occurring, you know, but it's in different ways. I went to a doctor about a decade ago when I was in my 50s. And I like to stay fit, and I had a knee problem, and he said, well, you're old, you know, your knee's going to hurt. That's not what I wanted to hear. He wasn't willing to do anything because I'm old. So I went to another one, and I walked in. I said, I don't want to know how old I am. I got that figured out. What I want to know is exactly what's going on with my knee, and how can I get back to doing squats with 100 pounds? He was a sports doctor. He told me what I needed to do. He said it will hurt forever. But you can work it because it's not damaged. It's just arthritic. Guess what? I went back to those painful exercises and the pain got better.
Well, I was talking not so much about that as the rationing of, like, MRIs.
Well, but there is no official rationing going on. It's your doctor deciding, well, you know what? You're 85. You don't really need that MRI because whatever we find, is we're probably not going to want to treat anyway. And some of it is the cost to the healthcare system, but it's not the healthcare system making that decision. It's that doctor.
Well, there is the doctor discretion here, and a lot of it is based on the paperwork, and a lot of them don't want to have to get pre-authorization from your insurer to do a procedure, so they will just not offer it to you.
You know, that's the other part of it is, again, owning a healthcare company, I can tell you that the nightmares of going through the maze to get paid for even the simplest of items. A lot of types of medical equipment, those of you out there who need them are starting to discover they're no longer supplying them to Medicare or other organizations because, you know what, it's a loss. Why should they do it? When they have to expend 20 man hours to get paid $15 for something, it's just not worth it.
Another thing I want to touch on is terminally ill patients. Right now, and I hate to refer this to money, because if you don't have some sort of long-term care insurance plan, you're going to get released to hospice. And hospice is a fabulous organization. My dad,
it really is.
It is. When my dad was having to go on hospice, I cannot say enough about how fabulous those people were, how helpful, how educating they were, how they prepared us for the stages. It was unbelievable. The alternative to that is, if you can afford it under your long-term care policy, is to hire nursing care or whatever it is that you need.
See, in medicine now, what's interesting is, you know, 50 years ago, if you had a lot of money, you could get really good medical care, better than someone who didn't have a lot of money. But there were stages, you know, the poor person might not get as good health care, and the middle person might not get as good health care as the rich person, but it was better. But now the system is, again, so structured with so many boundaries that basically you either get this lousy health care that is provided by the Affordable Care Act, or if you're really rich, you can get the greatest health care in the world. There's not much of an in-between anymore, and that's because they've structured it all.
A question I had talking about hospice. Does a doctor have to give you an order for hospice or these?
No, the doctors do have to order hospice, but it's, I mean.
Same thing with nursing care. Do they have to write an order for that?
Yes. Because, again, a lot of that's payer-based. You know, there are, doctors are still at the apex. They have to sign on everything, even if it's something they know nothing about. The rules are they have to sign. So, yes, pretty much any question you ask me about health care, does a doctor have to sign? Yes. It's even though when it makes no sense, it's just the way it's built. Our system is ancient, and it's, well, we're going to talk about some new innovations.
Yes, one of them I want to talk about, before we get into that, though, I want to talk about one thing California has done with terminally ill patients, and that's last year they passed the end-of-life option that went into effect in June of 2016, and it's some people refer to it as the right to die or assisted death law in California, but it's really not either of those.
No.
The conditions... There are certain guidelines, and there are things, we'll list them. You must be 18 years old and have the capacity to make a medical decision.
Which could be questionable, but, that gives you a lot of room, the capacity to make a medical decision.
And that's a doctor's discretion also.
Right.
It takes two doctors. Your attending doctor and a consulting doctor must agree that you have a terminal illness likely to cause death within 6 months.
It's interesting that for women, you're going to get mad at me about this. For women, the whole abortion thing, it's about the rights to do what I want with my body. But here we are, somebody that wants to do something that's only about their body and their existence, and look at what we have to go through to allow it.
Yes. Okay. Number three, you have to verbally make two requests for this type of assistance from a doctor, and they have to be 15 days apart, followed by a written request on a specific form called Request for an Aid in Dying Drug to End My Life in a Human and Dignifying Manner.
The form must be signed, dated, and witnessed by two adults, and it can be rescinded.
You can change your mind if during that 2 weeks or before it ever happens.
and, of course, you must be a citizen of California.
Yeah, you have to be a resident. The doctor must counsel you on when, where, and how to ingest the pill, which is a prescription, preferably in the presence of another person. You should take it.
And when the prescription is filled in 48 hours prior to ingesting the pill, you must sign another form, final attestation, for an aid to die and end my life in a humane and dignified manner. And think about this. This is the end of your life, one of the two most important events, the other one being the beginning. And it's a formal process, which...
paperwork.
It's kind of like this whole consent thing that the colleges are trying to do, which kind of makes sex hilarious. But I don't know. It takes out the meaningfulness of the end of your life, which is very meaningful.
And it is considered dignified, but when you think about it, it feeds the bureaucracy.
Right.
They've even thought of the fact that this is not to be classified as a suicide, and the doctor can decide what he wants to put on your death certificate. So it's very emotional. It's very solemn. It's not to be taken lightly, and I understand why they put these safeguards of time in there.
Right.
A lot of the... doctors who don't want to participate in this, and they have the right to say, I'm not going to write those kinds of prescriptions and do these guidelines. But it gives that terminal patient a choice. And a lot of people say, well, what if the cure comes 6 months after he dies? There's a certain degree of quality of life that is maybe more important to him.
Well, and that question is invalid. Because that can apply to everything. I mean, pneumonia. Mm.
Yes.
100 years ago, pneumonia killed you, period, unless you had a very strong constitution. So that's really an invalid. Frankly, for me as a libertarian, I think Soylent Green is probably the way to go. You went in a place, they played the music you wanted, and it was done.
Yeah. He's a movie
buff. But things were as miserable as they're trying to make it for us now. So there was a reason.
And medicine is still evolving, and doctors' performance or participation in our lives is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about CrowdMed.
Yeah, things are changing, and I think a lot of us medical people are going to become obsolete, and it won't be intentional. It'll just be an evolution. CrowdMed is an interesting website. As I understand it, the story was that this gentleman had a sister who had an illness, and no one can figure it out. It took him 8 years to figure out what her illness was. So during this process, he decided to build this website called CrowdMed. And the idea of the website is that you put your symptoms and so on out there, and information about your illness, and there's medical professionals and even patients from all around the world who have their input in a volunteer fashion about what your problem might be. But think about this in terms of statistics and the bell curve. If you have 500 people that say it's one thing, and 1,000 people that say it's another, and 10,000 that say it's another, and 600,000 that say it's this thing, guess what it is? And so it was very effective. Now, his website didn't get up and running in time for his sister's resolution, but they had resolved it before the website was up and running, so he ran her program anonymously, to the system, and they figured it out in 3 days. What took the medical system 8 years, a lot of different doctors and so on, it took CrowdMed 3 days. They came up with the same answer and the same solution.
Well, the doctor is just like the rest of us. He is the sum total of his life experiences. If he's never seen what you've had, he's never been exposed to it, he has no knowledge, it wasn't taught in medical school when he was there, how can we possibly expect him to know what it is?
And if he's, if he's the type of guy who's going to tell you, I know what it is and it's this and you need to listen to me, and you're the type of person who just listens without authority to any medical person, you're looking for trouble.
Well, sometimes his ego can get in the way of what you really need, too.
Yeah, or hers.
Right. And so CrowdMed might have a very useful purpose and a definite future.
Well, think about this. What are the powers of a physician? They are diagnostic and surgical. That's what they do. When they need, wounds cared for and all that, it's the nurse who does that. So this CrowdMed idea will eventually overtake the whole diagnostic process.
These are doctors that voluntarily contribute,
also,
don't
they? They're also other people, too.
Right, but I mean it's...
It's doctors, it's therapists of all kinds, it's patients who have had illnesses. And so now imagine how sophisticated robots are getting, and as robotic sensors and robotic AI improves, that surgical aspect will also be taken over and probably be done much better. So our system will change, and it won't be intentional. It's just going to evolve that way. Bureaucracies will try to control it and ruin it, so it'll take some time because of that, but it will change.
Kaiser Permanente is already on that track. They've partnered with a Silicon Valley developer to create and test new hardware and software for 10 years from now. And as an example, a 68-year-old man wears a wrist monitor that's unknown to him, detects that his heart rate has become irregular. The monitor notifies a distant team of doctors who dispatch a driverless car packed with sensors and medical gear to get a closer look at him. And if necessary, take him to a pharmacy or an emergency room or help diagnose him on the spot rather than him find out 2 weeks or 3 months later that he's had a heart issue and he calls his doctor and he waits for an appointment a month out. And I think it's phenomenal.
Actually, and I see the day in the future, which some of you sci-fi fans will like too, where your smartphone tells you that you have a problem and then programs your personal surgical box for you, and you climb in it and you get healed and then you go to work. And well, believe me, that sounds far-fetched, but you just wait and see.
They even have the nanotechnology now for to place a tiny little, for lack of a better word, a little robot. It looks kind of like a bug.
Right.
That goes inside of a capsule that you swallow, and it goes into your bloodstream and helps take care of what is ails you. It is not gone into clinical trials yet. It is still in the FDA look at this process. But that is going to dramatically change our lives when we don't have to have that doctor repeat visits to find out what's the matter with us. We can take a capsule or wear a band or walk into a box and the diagnostic part of it's done.
I'm smiling because I'm visualizing how bureaucracies hate to be rendered irrelevant, and the comical way that all of this incredible technology will turn out because of bureaucratic regulation.
Well, hopefully they're behind the curve. That's all we can hope for.
There'll be plenty of black market that'll do it the right way, I guess. So, but there are wonderful things coming, and if we can get out of the way and let them happen, our lives could be so much better. We need to learn how to be people again and make decisions and do work and be responsible. Your healthcare, again, remember the beginning of the show. The biggest cost to healthcare is lifestyle. It's not doctors and nurses and hospitals. It's what they have to go through bureaucratically to provide your healthcare. And it's your poor personal choices in many cases that ruin your health that wouldn't have to happen if someone made you be responsible for your behavior.
I want to bring up here one cost that I still believe is out of control, and that's drugs. The pharmaceutical companies have gotten in bed with government and gotten these 17-year patents on a new drug, claiming R&D costs, and universities do tremendous work in R&D. They're prohibited from doing clinical trials, so they hand over their research to these drug companies.
Okay, but when the companies get in bed with the politician, which one's the prostitute?
I understand that. But again, the drug companies, Congress has prohibited Medicare and VA from negotiating drug prices.
Right.
So the drug companies basically can charge whatever the market will bear. And they have these 2000.
And that would be fine if Congress would back off and take away these lengthy patent periods.
Or if they would curtail the lobbyists.
Price controls.
Right. Well, not price controls, but they need the company that gets $2,000 for a pill, I'm sorry. That is ridiculous. You are no more in the business of medicine. You're in the business of making huge profits. And that's right. That's your job as a corporation. But don't whine to me about R&D and you're selling a pill for $2,000. I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
Well, when you demonize someone, they have to find a way to try to defend themselves. But you're right. In my opinion, the problem is the politician, because if they were not being successfully lobbied, these companies wouldn't have the advantage. If the people made laws, simple laws, not intrusive laws, laws that said, no, you have an invention, you get 3 years, whatever it is. And after that, it goes on the market.
And that's reasonable. Competition will drive it down.
But the problem is we're asking the people who make the laws to make a law to fix this, and they're the ones being lobbied. So I don't see the solution other than maybe term limits, because they're not going to get reelected. They don't have any reason to be lobbied in most cases.
And the lobbyists just a few years ago, and I don't know if you've been watching television long enough to remember 20 years ago, there were never any drug commercials on television.
Right.
Now we are bombarded with them because the insurance company lobbyists, not the insurance companies, the drug company lobbyists got Congress to say, okay, you can advertise to the public.
But think about why that was effective. Why would they do that?
I don't know, when we can't buy the drug.
I do. I know why. Because they know that we are now sheep. And one of the other things that the American public does not want is it's one thing to control your pain. We no longer want any pain. If we have the slightest ache, we want the doctor to give us a pill to fix it. So why does McDonald's advertise to kids? Because the kids will harass their parents into giving them what they want. Why do the drug companies advertise to the general public? Because they'll go to the doctor and say, I heard this drug was good. I want that. He gets paid for how much time with you? So his simple answer is, well, here, you can have it then. It's the system that's ruined it.
I just feel like, why are you advertising to me when I can't go and buy it?
Because it's effective. Why would they spend the money?
And it drives up the cost of the drug.
Right, because the doctors are being lazy when they let the patient tell them what they want. But that's the only outcome that they can be looking for.
I want to do talk one more thing before our show's over. And that's Congress has introduced a new bill to address the opioid addiction in our country. And there are 2 million Americans who abuse prescription painkillers a year, cause 28,000 deaths a year from overdoses of these. And I personally don't think we can legislate this issue. I think it has to be an individual. It has to be the community. It has to be family. But it'll make it harder for Medicare and VA people to abuse painkillers. And that's also to obtain them. VA is going to expand their training of personnel within VA to counsel these patients. It would allow pharmacies to partially fill these types of prescriptions so there's not an excess of them around to be stolen or sold on the black market. It would allow nurse practitioners and physician assistants to prescribe treatment for addiction.
They need to come up with something like, I remember in hospitals they had these pain pumps that the patient operated. And what the doctor prescribed is how much medication you could have in the space of a certain period of time. And then you can give yourself a whole bunch if you want, but then you don't have any for later.
Well, not only that, you press the button and you didn't know if it was coming out or not.
Well, you could feel it pretty quick because they were IV.
Oh.
But the thing was, the patients did well. Why? Because they knew there was a lot of pain coming later, so they didn't overdo it in most cases. Because they were not going to get any more. It didn't matter how bad their pain was. We need to do that with people. We need to say, listen, you got arthritis. We don't want you to be in horrible, agonizing pain all the time. But you know what? You're going to have some pain. We can't eradicate it all. And we really do expect nowadays for them to eradicate pain. Pain is a part of life, and we need to get used to that. That's why we're all getting addicted to these opioids. They want total control of pain. And if you have a human body, that's not going to happen without overdosing.
And I have recently read that one of the most dangerous prescription medications for people over the age of 60 are sleeping pills.
Yeah.
That they are causing, it's not just the side effects, but it is what it does to you and the interaction it has with other drugs.
Not only that, if you have sleep apnea and you're not getting it treated, sleeping pills make it worse.
So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, you could really have severe apnea because you're on a sleeping pill if the sleeping pill does work.
This legislation would also make that drug, that overdose treatment drug, available. I think it's called naloxone.
Naloxone or naloxone.
Naloxone. And I guess most policemen carry this drug that if they come across somebody or are called to respond, and they can give it. But they're going to make it more available at schools, all kinds of clinics. A lot of people be able to have it if you have a family member that has this addiction.
Like Narcan, you can reverse the effect.
And they're trying to get doctors and nurses to be more proactive in identifying those that are at risk and can possibly create an intervention by one of the public health programs that are already available. But again, I think this goes like alcoholism. The alcoholic has to be the one to decide he needs help.
Reality therapy, which is a form of counseling for psychological issues, is about understanding that if you're an alcoholic, the reason AA works is because no one can, without duct taping your arms and putting you in a closet where we can watch you 24 hours a day, the only person who cannot take the drink is you. The only person who cannot take the drug is you. Your choices are the only thing that will solve the problem, but we're not giving people that harsh, quote-unquote, medicine. We're trying to alleviate all these pains, and the people need to understand life is a little bit of pain. And we're not making people personally responsible, and that's the other part of that equation I said at the beginning of the show, that people need to take charge of their own life and their own health, and they need to if you want to be sloppy about your personal behavior, that's okay. This is America. But you have to be responsible for the consequences, and that's what we're not doing.
Recently, the Reading Police Department has initiated the discussion on these clinics that drug patients go to get medication that prevents them from feeling the effects of their addiction that drives them back to drugs so that they can recover. And I think that's probably one of our best chances, because it's the patient is participating in his own cure, his own help, and it gives him, it might be a crutch, but it is a crutch. When we break a leg, we need a crutch, and he needs that crutch also, and I think it's a good idea.
Right.
And Chico's got one, but all these patients drive all the way to Chico every day to get this medication.
Yeah, and I just, one of the problems with medication is it's just all these things would be effective if we would be responsible about them. I know people that have been heroin addicts that have been on methadone for 20 years. That's not what the program was designed to do. But we, you know, you lower their methadone, oh, I can't take it, I'm going crazy, and we give them more. And what we need to start doing is saying, well, I'm sorry, I guess you have to go a little crazy because we have to get you off of this. Why take them off of heroin to put them on methadone? It's
a bridge, I'm assuming.
But I'm saying take them off heroin to put them on methadone, not to get them off of everything, but to put them on methadone, and now they've been on that for 20 years. What's the point?
Well, because they don't act crazy like they do on heroin, and they don't rob people when they're on methadone.
Only because they're getting it for free.
But again,
give them their heroin.
You can down-dose them.
But that's what they're not doing. That's what I'm saying.
But in time, that's what the system should be doing.
You're right, and that's all I'm saying. We need to hold people responsible and say, no, I understand it's uncomfortable, but the regimen we're giving you, the decreasing doses, that is the amount that's safe, and you need to deal with it a little bit. I understand it sounds harsh, but it's the only real answer. All the other things aren't answers. They're just making people feel good. That must be our signal. It looks like we're finished listening to me rant and rave.
You can contact us at examinelife@kkrn.org. Good night.
Good night.